I am Debbie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Debbie.
And I want to thank the group for having me tonight. And, you know, whenever I speak, I feel like, you know, people say, you know, why do you speak? Someone I work with, she's not an alcoholic. So she wants to know, like, why do you do that? You know, I let her know that that's, one, it's my duty, like Dr. Bob said. It's my pleasure. I feel that it's also a way for me to pay back what was so freely given to me. And additionally, someone I know once said, you know, that we always hear about gratitude. I'm grateful. I'm very grateful. And he said he thinks of the word gratitude as an action word. So what are my actions showing that support my gratitude? And so I like to think that doing service, whenever I'm asked to do service when at all possible, is a way for me to show the gratitude that I have for AA. Because I never thought that I could actually get sober and be happy. Like that combination, mm-hmm. I didn't think could exist. Like not drinking and happiness didn't seem like a combination that went together. And usually, you know, when I always try to condense, you know, when we're up here speaking, we try to condense everything down to 15 minutes. So we're always like cutting everything out. So tonight, maybe some most people know me here, so maybe you'll hear a little bit more about who I am, where I came from. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. You know, that's the motherland of us all, I think. And you know, growing up in Brooklyn, like now when I look back on my life, there are very positive things and very negative things. You know, my family life was not very positive. You know, it was a violent, chaotic home, and that wasn't so positive for me. But when I was outside, you know, with my little hoodlum friends, you know, I was happy. You know, I was just a little kid playing. And, but I bring that up, not because, you know, well, I am a proud Brooklynite, but really because, you know, when I was younger and I would look at my family and it was really, you know, very chaotic, and a lot of the things that went on, early on I felt this feeling of not belonging. You know, we hear that in AA. We feel like we never fit in. We don't belong. But there I was, you know, me and my cohort, Pooh, you know, sitting like, look at these people. They're crazy. And I don't know why I had that feeling, where that voice came from when I looked around at, you know, the chaos that was going on. You know, I guess maybe when I was, you know, I'd be at other people's houses and I saw, like, oh, these people don't act like this. They seem very nice to each other. I want to be here. You know, and so that feeling would, you know, dominate my life. Now, that feeling isn't the reason why I'm an alcoholic, but that is one of the feelings that was predominant throughout and made alcohol that effect so appealing to me, you know, because you'll hear about that a little later on. So, like I said, growing up there, there are a lot of positive things, and eventually, my parents would divorce, and we'd move out here to Long Island. Now, I thought Long Island must have been created on the seventh level of Dante's Inferno. I was like, I was shell-shocked. You know, you people didn't know what a stoop was? Nobody was hanging out on them? I was like, what do you people do? I didn't know what to do. And it was very, you know, even though it's only, it's not that far away, but culturally it was very different from where I grew up. Where I grew up, what was important is, I was a big tomboy, so it's like, you could get on, you know, climb that tree, get on the roof, hit that person with a dirt bomb down, you know, that was important stuff. Here it was what you wore, where you were going, who you're hanging out with, you had to get driven everywhere. You know, what? Where's the subway? You know, I was like, confused. So once again, that feeling of not belonging, you know? And I still didn't really feel like I, even though my mom divorced my biological father, who was close to chaos, she did marry the man who I was after my father, who raised me with alcohol, but he was an alcoholic. And he was after that alcoholic life. Like, you know, I always dreamed of a day when, in my home, all my dining room chairs would match. Yeah. Our family liked to break things, you know, so dining room chairs, they're always mismatched, but it wasn't necessarily like a design theme, and, you know, that we have. So I figured that's when I would arrive, like when my dining room chairs would match, I'd be there. And so here I was in Long Island with that same feeling again. And I had said, you know, I never wanted to be like them, you know, because to me, I was like, I was never going to drink. I was never going to smoke cigarettes. I was just not going to be like this. And then one day, yeah, I had been hanging out with some people who were older than me, and I thought they were very cool. And basically, they seemed to drink a lot. So one day, I drank a lot. And that was like, I feel like when I say, like, my first drink, like, the light should be dim, some, like, you know, some soft music should come on. Yeah, because it was like falling in love. It was the most magical moment for me. Because suddenly, everything I felt not belonging, self-conscious, feeling all these feelings that maybe a normal teenager probably feels anyway, was gone. I felt great. So I got sick the next day, but I felt great. I was like, oh my God, now I know why these people are drinking all the time. And now I didn't know that very first time that I drank alcoholically, and I wouldn't know what to drink, being an alcoholic was for a very long time. Even when I came into AA, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. To me, I had a different image in my mind of what that was. So, really, I just, after that moment on, I just drank. Everything I did, I drank. I loved to drink. And, you know, I can tell you all the things I did in my life, but I was just always drinking. You know, I managed to go through college, but it took me a very long time. I worked in restaurants and bars. And people in restaurants and bars, I don't know if you guys know this, they like to drink too. They don't really mind if you're drinking so much either. And it's a good way to not have to spend as much money drinking. So this was a fabulous thing for me. I thought I had arrived. But along the way, you know, of this great facade I had, if you took a moment and stopped, really, you know, I wasn't hungover, I wasn't drunk, you might find out that I was so unhappy. I was really unhappy, and I didn't know, I felt like something was wrong with me. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. So, you know, I pursued therapy and psychiatric care and Oprah. And when Oprah came out, I was like, this is going to be, she's going to have a show and I'm going to watch the right show about, and, you know, I thought Oprah had all the answers. I still think, yeah, a lot of people seem to think that about Oprah. They didn't have Dr. Phil, thank God. And yet, you know, I didn't find any answers, you know. I didn't really, I found a great vocabulary to talk about what was wrong with me, you know. I could really, and what was wrong mostly also with you guys. Because you guys was why there was something wrong with me. There wasn't really anything wrong with me if you guys all just, you know, straightened out, slept, and flew right. I wouldn't be in such a pickle all the time. And I guess the person who you're giving a lot of money to sometimes agrees with that. Not always. But some of them would sometimes say things to me that disturb me. There are people along the way who, it's not like I was drinking like an alcoholic. What that means, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, is that when I start drinking, I can't stop or control the amount I take. And that kind of looks like, oh, you know what? It's Thursday. I'm going to be home by 10 tonight. I'm going to leave the bar by 10. Oh, it's 11. Okay, I'm going to leave the bar by 11. Okay, you know what? Midnight. That's, oh, well, I got to buy back. Okay, well, now I got to buy that from that one. Oh, it's 1. Okay, I'll just stay for, oh, well, you know, I might as well stay till closing. I'll get up for work. You know, and that whole thing. And then, you know, I know one time I was like, I was dating someone. We were living together, and I called him at 6 o'clock, and I was like, I was supposed to make dinner. And I was like, I'll be home in an hour. So, where are you? I'm like, I'll just be home in an hour. And then at 8 o'clock, I'm like, I'm still tied up. I'm like, where are you? And I wasn't going to tell him where I was at a bar. Where I used to work. I was like, oh, come again. I was like, I'll be home in an hour. You know, then it's midnight. Now I'm completely rocked. He's like, you're drunk. I should come and get you. Click. I called one more time at like 2 o'clock. He was mad at me. But I don't know who this guy thinks he is. He's mad at what, you know, and then you talk to everyone at the bar, and you complain about how horrible this, and they're supporting you. Like, I can't believe that. I was like, me neither. And this is really, but I saw nothing wrong. You know, and then I get home and got an attitude, and the next day there's problems. You know, and I'm like, I wonder why I drink. What's the rule of delivery? But you know, the truth is, because that made it okay. That made sense in my mind. You know, I didn't realize that that wasn't why I couldn't leave the bar at 6 o'clock. I couldn't leave the bar at 6 o'clock. Mm. It was actually, one would say physically impossible. Because my body is different from a non-alcoholic, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that my liver and my pancreas process alcohol differently than a non-alcoholic. You know, in our big book, they talk about that allergy that someone, you know, Dr. Silver, you know, he had this theory way back when. Well, now they've proven that our liver and pancreas are actually different. We don't process the chemical in alcohol the same way. And because that chemical builds up in our system, it creates a craving for more. And I don't like to say it because I always mispronounce it, so I just skip saying the chemical. And thank you. And because of that, it makes it impossible for me to just have one, to just have two. Then when I have two, now I have this buildup going on, which makes me crave the third, and the third makes me crave the fourth. And this cycle continues. And that's, I also have an obsession of in my mind. And the book talks about that being a phenomenon of some sort. That, and they say maybe we'll never know the age-old riddle of why we have that obsession. But I have an obsession in my mind that will cause all other thoughts to be blotted out. That will say, it's okay that you were supposed to be home at 6 and it's midnight. That is perfectly fine. And that I walk into that bar, though it's never happened before, and I say, I'm only going to have one or two. Mm-hmm. And I honestly believe it, which I'm sure you all can identify with. And so, like I said, there are people along the way, you know, when I would sit in therapist's office and they would tell me, I think you're an alcoholic. You know, and I would tell them, I'm like, you probably think everyone's an alcoholic. And they're like, no, sorry, we think you're an alcoholic. You know, I thought they were like, you know, what did they know? They read a lot of, you know, wordy books and whatever. It's like, I have emotional problems. Let's talk about that and leave my alcohol alone. But one therapist had me do a little experiment, which I remember, and this is, I probably was like 22. She said, tonight, you know, she never told me not to drink, which was probably wise, because why would you tell her? She knows it was impossible for me not to. So I want you to go tonight when you go to the bar. I'm not going to tell you not to drink, but I want you to just, for the first 5 minutes, not order a drink. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes. Can you do that? Yeah. Ridiculous. I remember I was at the inn in Long Beach, and all my friends were already out, so they, you know, I always had to catch up. But I always caught up a little too much, you know? And so I walk in, and let me tell you, I don't think I made it to 5 minutes. It was like, you know, the clock was like, bing, bing, in the second hand, ticking so loud. I thought maybe like 3 minutes, I just stood there like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, people are like, hi. I'm like, yeah, hi. What's up? I'm like, just get off of work. Like, you know what? I didn't know. And then, like, as soon as, like, you know, I felt, I didn't actually look at my watch, it felt like 5 minutes. It could have been two, I don't know. I was at that bar so quick, I'm like, I need a beer to shot. So when I saw her then, she's like, did you do that? She said, well, yes, I did. She said, and what was that experience like? I said, it was hard. She said, why? I said, because I was bored. I didn't know what to do with myself. She said to me, Deb, you know what happens when I go somewhere and I'm bored? Well, no. She goes, I leave. She's like, you know, I don't change who I am. I was like, I don't like this thing. She also told me one time, you know, it wouldn't make any sense to me Like, I heard her, but I didn't hear her, you know what I mean? For, like, probably, like, you know, over 10 years before that woman made any sense to me. She said, if you went out for a nice dinner, you spend a lot of money. She said, you know, and then you get home and your head doesn't feel so good and your stomach doesn't feel so good and you're in bed and you can't get comfortable and you throw up and you have an experience. She's like, you might think, what? You've got food poisoning, right? Possibly. She's like, you might actually go to the hospital. You got food poisoning. That's what you do.
Yeah.
She's like, would you go back to that restaurant? No, I got food poisoning. And she's like, but you do that every night when you go to the bar. So that, you know, that wasn't a good therapy day. You know, so it's not like people didn't propose this, but it couldn't penetrate me. You know, because alcohol was the one thing I could tell you I could depend on and that I loved. Because you could all be my best friends, and you could walk away. As long as I had my alcohol, I'd be fine. See you later. And that's pretty much, you know, I lived life that I had. And I had, you know, lots of different things happen. And so how did I wind up in AA? Well, you know, those people had been saying that. Many people had proposed that to me. And I think it was about 98, something like that. It's foggy sometimes when you look back on time when you come in because you're a little foggy. And my stepfather, who I told you would raise me, he wound up getting terminal cancer. And for the first time in my life, alcohol wasn't working for me. Like, I couldn't drink it. Like, that never happened to me. My friend was always a reliable, solid friend. You know, if anything would happen, I'd be like, you know, I could always shrug it off. And so I felt like I was really freaking out. You know, I was just freaking out. I was losing it. I don't remember ever being that angry in my life. I used to work in Hempstead down on Fulton Street, which sometimes some people might think is not the best area all the time. And I remember, especially at night, there used to be people, you know, who were not, who were speeding, hanging out in the parking lot, laying in the parking lot. No, seriously, used to lay in the parking lot. You had to watch where you pulled into a spot. The trip. So I was so mad. I wanted, like, I would look at people like, well, I wanted someone to start. Because I was so angry. I was filled with rage. I just wanted an excuse to freak out on somebody. Nobody would start with me. I'm like, oh, God, only me. You know, we had parole right downstairs. I'm like, nobody? But at the same time, I was filled with utter sadness, you know? And so I said, you know what, let me go see what this AA was about. And I came in, and like I said, I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I definitely did not think I was an alcoholic. I was just coming in to put this to bed, finally. Because I still felt like, you know, there was something definitely wrong with me. You know, I still didn't know what that thing was, but definitely there was something wrong with me. And I met some very pleasant people, and you guys were having a pleasant life. And I thought, I didn't know if I believed you guys were all not drinking. You know, I was a little suspect of that. Maybe you guys weren't all getting drunk, you know, like maybe you're drinking, just not getting drunk. And also I was, I just couldn't think of myself as an alcoholic. Like I said, I didn't know what that was. And so I came in and, I did everything you're not supposed to. I did no step work. I went to Big Book studies a couple of times. I didn't understand why you guys studied this book. You know, I was a simple reading level. At the time, one of my sponsors who was trying to help me, like half the women in Oceanside sponsored me. When I see them, they're like, oh, hi. I'm like, oh, hi. And I think that was like one of my sponsors. One of my, you know, it's like my husband's like, how many people did sponsor me? Well, I went out of luck. I'd get a new sponsor every time. So that was surely the thing. Even though they all were staying sober. It was their fault. And, yeah, I remember saying to one of my sponsors, you know, that, yeah, do you need some cliff notes for this? Because I see you guys study every week. Like, you know, she should have slapped me. Like, yeah. was like, so obnoxious. Meanwhile, here I am, so obnoxious, not listening to anyone, very judgmental, and I keep going out drinking. Yeah, yeah, figure it out. Someone said, I said, you know, people would come up and tell you what was wrong. You know, sometimes people mean well. They're like, you know what your problem is? And I'd be like, okay, what's my problem? People would come up with all kinds of things. And then someone came over to me and they said, you know what your problem is? And I'd say, no. I thought no one else could tell you you're an alcoholic. Only you could decide that. And they said, in your case, we've been watching. Someone needs to tell you. That's how you keep coming in and out. And they said, see, you can't, because I thought if I stopped for like 2 months, 3 months, yes, I stopped. So what do you mean I can't stay stopped? But they're like, no, that doesn't mean you stopped. They're like, you keep coming in and out. Because that is why. I was hoping for a heavy drinker, you know what I mean? I was like, heavy drinker! Another person told me who I remember outside the Big Book study, I was out in the back of St. Anthony's. I went out. I had a lot of coins. I went out a lot. So I would always be like waiting for it. Like someone would say some magical thing and then I'd be sober. You know? And he said, you know what, kid? You know what your problem is? And, you know, people like to tell you what your problem is. I was like, all right. He's like, you have no idea how sick you are.
Wow.
I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you have no idea how sick you are. You got a step one problem. I was like, well, what do I do? He's like, I can't help you with that. He's like, you have to find that truth yourself. I was like, oh, yeah, I cleaned it up a little. And I was like, very, oh, hmm. You know, he's not even going to help me. I didn't understand. You know, but that was actually, those two people were the ones who said the most truth. And it would take me a long time to realize what that was. And then for me, and I had a, you know, like everyone else, I came in with a million things, you know, and a million, I was very defiant. I didn't want to listen to people. I had an answer for everything, even though it was usually the wrong answer, but I thought it was right. And I had a God problem. I didn't think there was a God. So I thought, now I'm really up the creek, you know? And I really didn't understand what you people, you know, it was nice that it made you guys feel better. And that's nice. I'm glad for you. But I live in reality. And so, of course, I had these difficulties. You know, my struggle is mostly, in my history, has been 1, 2, and 3. That has been my biggest struggle, which caused most of my relapses in the past. And then one night I met this woman at Keep It Simple in Oceanside. And usually at Keep It Simple, I like that meeting because it was a very social meeting for me. You know, because I told you I did all the things you shouldn't do. Like, I like to sit in the back with all the other people who were just as sober as me. And, you know, joke around and talk when the speaker's speaking and talk about everybody else, go out a million times and smoke, you know. Everybody's dating everybody else. No one's staying sober. So I loved that meeting. And then one night this woman came, and she wasn't, maybe I had heard other speakers like that, but I really feel it was God's hand for me. I feel like I had the Holy Trinity of sponsorship. And this woman, for whatever reason, she spoke to me and I was able to hear her. And someone finally gave me the words because I didn't know how to explain what it was. But she was so in love with her higher power, with her God. I was like blown away. Because she wasn't like preachy or anything, and she was cool. I would have wanted to drink with her. You know, she was very pretty. She was tattooed. She was a very cool girl. But she was so in love with this God of hers. And she also had a similar background to me. She wasn't drinking. And she wasn't miserable about not drinking. And I actually believed her. And someone said to me, her conviction convinced you. Oh, okay, finally, I didn't have words. And so I wanted to find out, because I never really saw when people said, find someone who has what you want. And I guess up until that time, maybe I just never saw it. But I wanted what that woman had, because my father was still dying. He was very sick. And her brother had just passed away from this disease. And I remember her speaking. She was out jogging that morning. And she said she never felt closer to her brother and her God than that morning. She could feel them with her. I was having the complete opposite experience. Like, how could that be? And that sounded like something I'd want to know about. I wanted to know, how could that be? So I stalked her, and she became my sponsor. And she really helped me to find a power by which I could live, which I thought was impossible. Because her love for her God, you know, it was so compelling that despite her faith or anything else, she just wanted me to find that. You know, and, you know, to this day, I'm so grateful to her because, you know, how do you say thank you for finding such, like, this gift? Mm. You know, for the rest of my life, I'll be able to have my friend, you know, which I think of as my God. Because this woman stood up in a meeting and shared her experience, strength, and hope. And she said, people don't want to hear about God. You better get out now. Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's... Yeah, she...
Not like that.
Oh, yeah, you don't like that, you know. You better go. And she really just... I don't know, to this day, I always said, you know, if you ever wind up on CNN or anything, serial killer, I'm behind you. Nothing you could do, you know what I mean? So, like, my husband's like, you really want that, though? And I'd love to say at that moment on, I stayed sober. But I didn't. Because you need more than that. See, I still couldn't follow anyone's direction. I still didn't think I needed to listen to anybody. You know, and so after I drank again, and I thought I had the greatest sponsor in the world, and now I had drank, so now it couldn't have been my sponsor's fault. Because up until that time, it was always my sponsor's fault, you know. And sometimes you can find people who will find that information and agree with you. Mm-hmm. And which is dangerous. So I went to her sponsor. Ha! Little did I know, if I thought she was tough, oh boy. And this person really taught me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That there is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did not get to choose how the program works. This is how the program works. If I want to be part of the program, this is how it works. And this is what I will do. I did not have a sponsor who said, well, I suggest that you do this. My sponsor did not say that to me. My sponsor said, this is what you're going to do. My sponsor said that he guaranteed I can get sober, but the catch was that I had to actually follow what he said. That was the catch. And I was like, I can guarantee it. He's like, yeah, but you got to actually follow my direction. And I needed a lot of direction. I know some people feel that, well, sponsors just take two good steps and that's it. But I was lost in AA. I was miserable drinking in AA. It completely unmanageable. I needed a manager to help me get my life together. And I don't mean like, you know, balance my checkbook. I mean like, it's a good idea to get up on time for work. It's a good idea to go to work. That if you're supposed to be at a meeting at 7, you don't walk in at 7:10. I don't know if this person, he's here tonight, I don't know if he remembers the one time I came in a meeting late. And he was chairing the meeting. So he never told me to not come. You know, he said, you know, you show up at a normal time. He never discussed it. So I came in late, and he was there, and he's like, oh, look who's arrived! Well, everybody stop! You know, let that sit down. I'm like, oh. Oh, my God. So, you know, he never had to tell me not to come late again. I was like, oh, no, 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 no! I'm like, oh! You know, know, there was no discussion about me showing that night that I showed up late. It was very clear. You know, and that is more than I think the words, but, you know, like, he knew me, you know? And he showed me these steps in this book and why we study this book and how to study this book and help another person and how to do that. And what an amazing thing. Every day of my life, I still use what that person taught, just like my first sponsor, sponsor number two, who was my Holy Trinity, right? You got to stay with that. And really, you know, that really was when I really first entered into AA and became part of AA. But I wasn't always, you know, I'd love to say I followed everything this person said, but I, you know, excuse me, I was a bit of a ball buster, you know? But, you know, my sponsor is very wise, you know, and I think when we have sponsors, and you say, you know, well, damn, you're talking a lot about sponsorship. Well, in the beginning, good, strong sponsorship, I strongly believe in. I don't know about you guys, but I was out of my mind. I needed a lot of help. And I didn't really have that connection yet, that strong enough connection to get there. So I needed someone to help me until I could plug in and hear that, and where I wouldn't need someone to constantly be helping me. Not constantly, but be helping me through it. And I'll just say one other thing, because now I laugh, because I was like, oh my God, he's smart. And I also called one day from a gas station. I was complaining. And I said a derogatory statement about the person who was supposed to be pumping my gas because they were taking too long. He's like, excuse me? Like, you know, because what I had said. And he's like, well, why aren't you pumping your own gas? I said, but why should I when he's doing it? He's like, I thought you're complaining about money. I said, it's only a few cents. He's like, really? He's like, I think from now on you'll be pumping your own gas. I was like, now remember, he's been helping me read this book and learn about it. I said, well, it doesn't say that in the book. Like, no, it does not, but I am telling you. And whenever I started getting a little, you know, rowdy or whatever, he'd be like, we can go back to how it was before, Dale. You know, like, he was willing to be like, okay, take care. You know, who needs who? I was like, oh my God. And then I proceeded to call as many people as I could to tell them this atrocity that had happened. Now some people agreed with me. But some people were like, They just said, Like, I was like, what do you mean? And you know, I always feel, my God has a very good sense of humor. And for the next few months, everywhere I went, it was full service. I had to like drive around to find self-service. And then I'd be like, it would be raining, it would be cold, and I'd be thinking of it. I'm like, I can't believe it. What's the point? What's the point? Who cares? I'll give him the 50 cents. I had no idea, none, why I was told to pump my own gas. But I was okay. If this is going to help, I'll pump my own gas. Later on, I asked, what was that all about? This pumping of the gas? He said, I wanted to see if you were just going to follow some direction, Ben, because if you weren't willing to follow that simple direction, you weren't going to be able to follow through with the rest of the directions that I was going to give you than this program needs you to do. Like, Wile E. Coyote, why? Like, I was like, I was bamboozled. So eventually I got to not pump my own gas, but these days I do pump my own gas. But, you know, I needed that kind of, you know, I got taken out of those meetings, you know, where we, BMW meetings, right, you guys? Moan and whine. Yeah. I was like, these are the meetings, I was told where I was going. You know, some people are like, oh, choose a home group, you can go. No, this is where you're going. You're going to be in a solution-based meeting. These are where you're to go. So you can be around the solution. Because you've been very sick. You don't need to be around all that sickness. Some of them are my friends. You want to save your life? And see your friends after. And it was hard, you know what I mean? Because I felt like now I'm not part of anymore. But I started learning, like I go, my home group is in Valley Stream and all of that, and they have a big book study on Monday. When I started going there are some people there, I'm like, how do they know all this stuff? Really, I'd wait to see, like, there's a friend of mine, Herb, would sit on the steps, and I didn't know. When you first hear this stuff, it's pretty amazing. I'm going to go at night. Because I was always interested in what he had to say, because I had never heard it. And so I was excited about it. And some of these promises, by going through these steps, started to happen in my life. Then, as the book warns, you know, I feel like everything in this book is true. And I started resting on my Lord. See, I was doing so well. Did you guys know I was doing well? I actually did a big book study with my son. Look at me. And and I didn't realize, like, that was going on. You know, I had fallen asleep, as some would say. And I started acting out in different ways, not telling anyone. I mean, my dog knew, but, you know, he wasn't saying anything. And so then I was becoming sicker and sicker, but keeping the front going on in AA. You know, I'm great AA, but I'm getting sicker and sicker. And then one day, suddenly, drank. And, oh, my God, how did that happen? I was shocked and stunned. People were shocked and stunned because I am a great actress. You know? Really, we're just liars. One of my other sponsor would say to me, she's like, Deb, you're going to lie someday. I want you to know it's okay. And I'm like, she's like, you'll find that insulting. But she's like, no, it's okay because we're liars. That's who we are. Want me to lie to her? And so then I felt that was probably, for me, a bottom I didn't know. Because, you see, every time I went out, I would just come back. I didn't really lose, you know, losing stuff out here never meant much to me. You know, when I talk about my home, and when we grew up in Brooklyn, my biological father was, well, he was in a different type of regular business. He was a drug dealer. Apparently, he was quite successful because we lived a nice lifestyle. And so, but you know what? My family was so filled with chaos and unhappiness. But we had nice stuff. You know, and I always talk about this story about this woman. And so one time I went over to her house after school and her mom was there. And her mom had cookies. Her mom sat us down, helped us with our homework. And then her mom asked me if I wanted to stay for dinner, and her dad came home. And they all had dinner together. Everybody was really nice. You know, it was like such a nice feeling, though. You could smell in the apartment, like, you know, food was cooked on a regular basis, you know? And I was like, oh, my gosh, I like Janet's apartment. And that night, you know, I found lying was a good thing when I was younger, too, because they said, oh, you know, it's getting late. Maybe you should call your parents. I didn't have anyone to call. You know? I said, well, they're not home. Which they weren't, but I had a key. And they said, well, do you have a key? And I was like, no. And they were like, oh. Well, I guess you can stay with us. I was like, inside, like, yay! Like, yeah. So I, you know, I stayed over there at Venus's. It was wonderful. I was like, I want to be here every day. But meanwhile, back at my house, if you walked in there, you know, we had a, you know, my father, we joke, you know, skinny gone wild, it was in our house, like very marble and velvet, we had the loyal lamb going on. And so it looked a certain way, you know, we went on like two or three vacations a year, you know, all this stuff. I would have given every single way to be in the team. But, you know, out here never mattered to me. You know, when people call it losing stuff, I didn't care. But what I lost that last time I drank was, see, I never had a higher power. Remember I said that to you guys? So I never had anything to lose like that. I didn't realize when I drank that last time that when I woke up, that connection with my higher power was completely gone. Not even a smidgen was left. I was not that, like, you know, I didn't bargain for that. I mean, a little hangover, you know what I mean? And it was devastating. I was devastated beyond belief. And I thought that after having a sponsor who really just changed my life, having a support group, and I had lied to everybody. I lied to my husband because I had drank before and didn't tell anyone. I celebrated. Told you I'm a liar. Mm-hmm. And now I was in for it. And I had a horrible, horrible time. I remember when this meeting started, I wouldn't go back to my home group. I used to go Tuesday night. This meeting, I met the man who really had a vision about this meeting. I used to come here, and I was crying. I was miserable. And I thought I was never going to get this back, because look what I had done. And, but God is, my God is greater than any of that.
Amen.
And it had to happen. And I'm glad it happened, because it brought me, my ego, and everything else down. And so I had lied and deceived my sponsor, so he was a little hurt, you could say, after all everything he had done for me and been through with me, my husband, my friends. It was very bad for me, and for other people too. And so when I finally, this last time, which I pray to God will be my last time, by the grace of God, because I believe that's what it is, I had a different experience. And, you know, and today it's really not, for me, if I know what, for me, I don't know, you know, I can't always remember what things, what page things are. You know, my higher power is not this big book. And, you know, someone said, don't get stuck on page 164. Mm. Today I feel like I'm not stuck on page 164. I realize there's so much more. And I realize that everything in my life really is based on my spiritual connection. Everything in my life. And I didn't get that before. No idea. And going through these steps and really having a spiritual experience through these steps. Where before I think I had an experience, I'm not really sure, it's hard to say. You know, but I definitely had an experience. I didn't drink for a while. And for me, one of the, also with step three for me, was a very difficult thing for me was, I didn't understand, my sponsor said to me, how do you turn your will and your life over to God? When I was working with her, I said, what do you mean? She said, I want you to tell me, how do you do it? I said, what do you mean, how do I do it? She said, physically tell me. I was like, I pray. She said, I want you to reread the steps. Well, she said, it says to the care of your God. That God is going to take care of you, that you're willing to surrender, and let God take care of you from now on, then. That from now on, you don't have to run the show. You don't have to worry about all those things. And it came back to, you know, what my sponsor, who helped me find that higher power, said to me. She said, you know, she had me read Don't Worry in the Bible, this little section. And it came back to me, the concept of what Don't Worry was about. You know, I don't have to freak out all the time anymore. You know, I have something to rely on. Just like I relied on alcohol, I was relying on the wrong thing the whole entire time. And, you know, and I also use that analogy, like how a parent cares for their child. You can't always turn your child's will over to you. I think, you know, anyone who wants to hang out with a two-year-old for a little while, try and get them to give them your will. It's not going to be very successful. But you're always caring for them. You want them to choose that. And I feel like for me, that's what my God is today. He wants me to always choose his way. Sometimes I go a different way. I'm a knucklehead. You know? But it's a progress for me to learn about the spiritual world. You know, that sense has to be developed. And as long as I continue, I believe, to be open with this, it can develop. For me, I didn't have a lot of difficulty with the fourth step. Like I said, I had been a good therapy girl. So I was like, oh, I can write all my stuff down. But, you know, like it says in the big book, to observe how, right, I'm going to paraphrase, I'm not sure how it says it, but, you know, to kind of see how others are wrong is as far as we ever got. And answer something along those lines. And that was true. But I never figured out, because then you go to therapy, talk about your feelings, how everybody wronged you, they give you money, and you go away. And you do the same thing. somehow that's supposed to help me get better. And sometimes there'd be a little insight, but generally I didn't know what to do now. So then what? The difference here is to see how me was the problem. To see how I had really set things up, how it wasn't everybody else. And I had never imagined that. Because in my world, it really seemed like that. And the great thing about that is if it's me, through this program, through my higher power, I can change that. I can't change you guys. But that I can change. And so, when that idea of the fourth step of getting rid of all that stuff that weighed me down, I was okay with doing all that. I just felt bad for my sponsor having to listen to all this, for me, I'm just speeding up because, I didn't realize I was going to be blabbing so much. But, God will have me say what he will have me say. Like I said, felt bad for my poor sponsor having to listen to all this. And, for me, six, the preparation step, seven, it was important for me to reflect on the things that are objectionable to me that I found out in steps four and five. Because I didn't think a lot of my behavior when I had done a fourth step before was objectionable. I thought it was perfectly fine as long as you people didn't find out about it. I'll just go my merry way. I had to see why that behavior was objectionable. Because otherwise I wasn't going to ask for it to be removed. Because if I think it's perfectly fine, why am I, if I have my refrigerator and I look at the milk and it's a perfectly good date, I'm not going to throw it out. I'm not going to throw it out. But if I look at my milk and I realize, it's past the state, I'm going to throw it out. I needed to find out that a lot of my stuff was past the state. It had to go. But I had to want to get it out. And and I was grateful because God took away a lot of that stuff. And it wasn't just like, some wham, magical thing, some fairies came down. I can't tell you, how it necessarily, I can't tell you what magic step it is. But somewhere through this process, it occurs that not only am I free from the obsession to drink, which wasn't, drinking, like they say, is the symptom. My problem was bondage of self. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know what that was. And I become free of that, which has kept me a prisoner for so long, kept me asleep for so long. And that, by making these amends to people, again, I didn't know that I don't feel sorry. I didn't know that. But again, my words mean very little. And today I don't think necessarily my words are something to go by. I'd rather speak with my actions. Because my words, sometimes I pick the wrong words. I'm not always like, sometimes a little Brooklyn, like a person comes out and like, ooh boy, So I try to go by my actions. And in the men's, I always say to people, you don't go up to a fence and say, I'm sorry, you're broken, fence, and walk away. If it's broken, you actually go with some tools to actually fix it. You're going to physically do something to fix it, to repair the damage. You're not going to wait for the fence to be like, oh, I'm fine, any of that stuff. And I had to find that out, and that just because I thought I would get off the hook, like if someone let me go, like if I owed somebody money and they said, oh, forget about it. I'd love to hear that. My sponsor was like, no. Whatever that amount of money is, you find some way to donate it. Because you still owe the universe that money. You don't get to keep it. But thank God. Thank God my sponsor gave me that direction as well. And, I'm just going to jump for a minute. When we go through 12, having had that spiritual awakening, that's the key of all of this. Because then the rest of the steps, sometimes I think it's odd, because all these steps don't make sense until you're in 12. Then they all kind of come together in a different way. Up until then, you're starting to feel them out, but in 12, it's having that awakening. Some people have awakenings, but I think we have little awakenings all along. And the steps look different as you go through them. And for me, the result of this is carrying this message to other alcoholics to practice these principles in all of our affairs. is, to me, the most important step for me today, because that's the only thing I know that I sometimes can do. Sometimes I can't practice the rest of these principles, but I know, like, when all else fails, it tells me work with another alcoholic will save the day. And I know that to be a fact when I've been in bad situations, which is tough. You know, things happen in our lives where life will come calling to you. You know, my sponsor always, this ends at 8, right? My sponsor always said to me, you know, Deb, don't try and sell someone a bad deal of good. AA is not about moonbeams and butterflies. Okay. Everything's going to be great from now on, and you're never going to have another problem again. Life is going to come calling. But at this point, you're going to know how to handle life when it happens. And a lot of times for me, my experience, you know, I can't practice all these principles when I'm doing some sort of, something heavy is on me, something's going on. But the one thing I know I can do, and thank God, that we designed a program where we kind of are forced in, we lock ourselves into commitments and things of helping another person, or committing to other people, that we're pulled out of ourselves. And then I always feel like that's when my God could come in and do his housekeeping, you know? And, you know, step 11, I was told, you know, you could start that right away. To me, step 11 is the most important step in some regards, because that's where I connect with my friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like when people call my friend. You know, I feel like God is, for me, and you know, my God doesn't have to look. That's my favorite thing about AA, by the way. That my God does not have to be like anybody else's God. It's exclusive. It could be exclusive to me. It might look like your God. But it's the God that I think Emmett Fox talks about. You know, that secret place inside of you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that place. And today, you know, which is a miracle, is I know, which I didn't know before, that there is a God. Yeah, you know, I used to argue with people. I joke around, you know, I actually had a fight with a priest one day who tried to bless me, you know. I was violently anti-religious, like they say, and then, you know, and today I can say, you know, with all my heart, that my God is the most important thing to me, and my God loves me, and I have a God. And I believe that is why I'm here today. And that feeling that I talked about of not belonging, I honestly believe that it's not that I didn't belong. Or even that people say they belong here in AA, they feel like they belong. I think it's because we belong because we connect to that greater spirit in the universe. And then we're able to connect with each other in a deeper way. So we can feel a sense of belonging whenever we're with our fellow man. You know, because now I don't feel, I'm not like consumed with self and being uncomfortable with self and self, self, self. So, you know, I don't feel that same feeling of not belonging. I feel a sense of belonging to all of mankind. You know, we all are one and the same, and which is a real miracle for me. And, you know, I can't really ever repay what was done for me for AA. You know, speaking here tonight, it seems like, you know, how is that payment for people who saved my life? You know, and I take this very seriously because people really did save my life, you know. When I came into AA a month before I came into AA, I tried to kill myself. That's where my alcoholism brought me. Today, that's not my life. And it's not because of something I did, it's because I'm so wonderful or unique. It's the power of this program, the power of the people here, and the power that's in that universe. That's what changed me. You get to recreate your life, the book promises, and I believe that's true. And so no matter where you are today, no matter who you are, that promise is the greatest promise, I think, that for me, recreate, I thought my life was a mess. I get to recreate my life. And I thought that might not be true, but it's actually, you know, true. I got to recreate my life. And today I live a free woman. A free woman. How amazing is that when I was in constant bondage? You know, so, I want to thank you guys for having me. And, have a nice way of putting it.